Greetings. My name is Alice Johnson, and it's a pleasure for me to welcome you to the ICANN Strategic Panel on Identify Technology Innovation Webinar, Session 2. Before we begin, I'd like to briefly remind all participants of housekeeping items. This webinar is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. The session is being streamed via the Adobe Connect room. If you intend to voice comments or questions during the Q&A, please join the Adobe Bridge. Your lines are currently muted and will be muted throughout the presentation. You may submit questions or comments via the Adobe Connect chat pod during the presentation. At the end of the presentation, you will be given the opportunity to voice your comments and questions during the Q&A. All lines will be unmuted for the Q&A. If you are on the bridge, please remember to mute your computer speakers once the floor is open to avoid echo. If you wish to speak during the Q&A, please raise your hand in the Adobe Connect room to be added to the queue. Should you not be speaking, please mute your line using star 6. Dial star 7 to unmute. The slides, recording, and transcript will be made available following the session. You may find housekeeping indications in the Adobe Connect notes pod. And with that, we'll turn to Paul McAteetris, Strategic Panel Chair.
Thank you very much, Alice. This is the second version of this panel. I'm Paul McAteetris. I'll be talking for, if the last session is any judge, a little bit over half an hour following a set of slides. And then after that, we'll have open discussion. A bunch of the panel members are already here. Next slide, Al.
Please.
The formal charter is shown here. One of the things we're supposed to do is to develop a roadmap of what we think is going to happen to DNS and other identifiers. Note that it is an identifier technology innovation panel, and that was chosen on purpose rather than DNS, because there are other systems that exist now and in the future, and DNS is but one of them. Develop some recommendations and engage in the ICANN community, which is one of the things we're trying to do here today. Next slide, please. Who follows up after the panel? The panel is going to have a draft report at the end of this month. I think one of the things I want to emphasize is that version one is that we hope to catalyze or incent somebody to do something other than ICANN. And second choice is to have ICANN itself do something. ICANN is perhaps best at engaging. The DNS is certainly something that sees a lot of development in the ITF. There's lots of other people that are willing to give us advice and so forth. Things that, recommendations that we come up with will probably only happen at ICANN per se if they're close to the root in some sense. Although, of course, ICANN does separately and jointly sponsor things. But I just want to emphasize that we hope that we can develop some ideas that people outside of ICANN will think it's a good idea and we might move forward in some sort of partnership. Next slide, please. So the strategy we adopted was to try and look for sort of forcing trends, opportunities, and burning needs, and identify some things that haven't been perhaps pointed out as forcefully as they should have been in the past. And that involves avoiding well-plowed fields like DNSSEC or existing strategies for collisions, for example. Unless we've got something new to say, we sort of recorded the fact that we looked at a particular issue, but we're not going to try and be as all-encompassing as the hundreds or thousands of other people who are working at various aspects of the DNS. Next slide, please. Our deliverables, given the short time frame, which is sort of a shorthand for once upon a time we were supposed to have a year to do this, and it's been sort of compressed a couple of other times. Document all the issues that we look at, work on some interesting subsets, create a roadmap for what we predict over the next 10 years, especially ICANN relevant, and make some actionable recommendations. I should point out that whatever we do is actually going to be input in the strategic planning process that ICANN has in place that's getting underway. Next slide, please. When I say we, here are the people on the panel. Some of them are online now. We don't necessarily agree on everything that we discuss. I think that's fair to say, although someone may disagree with that. We've met about four times with various subsets. I don't think the panel has ever been in the same place at the same time yet. Next slide. Thank you. Just to start this off, what are ICANN's current identifiers? They're listed here, domain names, AS numbers, V4, V6. ICANN, as well as the people inside of the IANA, deal with these things. I think there's also a time zone database. So starting from here, next slide, please. The subset that we're going to talk about today are what we've discussed and what we think are drivers for the roadmap for the decade coming forward. Some information about new identifiers that may be coming along. Discussion about hardening the root and a discussion about DNS fundamentals. These are, again, another subset meant to fit the sort of half hour or so parameter for the start of discussion that we're having here. Next slide. Rather than talking about fundamental drivers and so forth, I think the panel does agree that there's sort of a Darwinian struggle that has gone on in the DNS and will go on in the future. And basically, we've grouped some of the ideas here under the expansion and contraction, although some of the ideas kind of cut both ways. So favoring kind of expansion of the DNS, there's things like just organic growth and momentum we have in the legacy base. We are installed, in some sense, in every computing element that's connected to the Internet. So there is a universality here that's, I think, unmatched by competing systems. We might disagree or agree on what competing systems are, but things like LDAP, for example, don't quite have the reach, although they may have different properties. So, you know, one of the things favoring expansion is just the momentum we have in the current system. A second thing is the new TLDs, and there's lots of people who have different opinions about the relevance of all 1,400 of them. I personally believe that some of them are above and below average, but they're certainly going to try and establish a number of new ideas, and nobody should be completely indifferent to the power of marketing to move stuff forward. We'll just have to see what happens there. There's new capabilities that are being put into the DNS every day, things like DANE, that may or may not cause expansion. New data types are another example of things that if you put more data into the DNS, it should be more useful to more people, and we'll talk about that as a separate issue. I think issues that favor contraction is there's sort of the user interface on browsers and the apps that you load. And the people who run those search bars would like to control them for purposes of commerce, or perhaps just because they want to use something that's almost up to artificial intelligence from the standpoint of understanding your perhaps voice comments. It may be that if every search is triggered by voice input, people aren't probably just going to be pronouncing domain names, but that would probably be part of the input. One of the things that was suggested to us by other people was that, you know, we should be thinking about developing 2D barcode components so that domain names could be embedded in 2D barcodes as opposed to contextual formats. At any rate, I think that the transition to portable devices and so forth makes it less obvious exactly what the role of domain names will be in that kind of situation. Second thing, arguing for contraction is sort of protocol and process ossification. Ossification is often applied to the Internet in general that says that, well, gee, it's hard to change things that we have, so new systems have to find new ways of doing things. We'll talk a little bit about maybe some ways to de-ossify or to try and get beyond all of that. But it's certainly the case that a bunch of people have found it difficult to get improvements and new things into the DNS, and so that tends to act against expansion or perhaps even force people to go elsewhere to get the facilities they need. There's commercial identifiers, you know, things like your Facebook ID, or I was, as one kid the other day said, I don't understand why everybody has to type the gmail.com at the end of their email address, seeing as it's always the same. You know, there's certainly commerce and a financial interest in owning identifier spaces, and maybe your Facebook ID will become the new lingua franca. And lastly is that there's a bunch of new systems coming from the research world, those could ultimately replace or enhance or whatever, provide new identifiers. Certainly web addresses, for example, might be viewed as the first version of all of those. Next slide, please. One of the things that is interesting is naming technology itself, I think, is sort of white hot in the research world. There's name-based networking, content-based networking, information-based networking, pub-sub, a whole variety of different approaches. I think they all agree that naming is a basic technology to replace addresses or various other kind of location-based stuff. You just stake the name of what you want, not where it is. And that's a concept that's very hot in the research world. About the only thing the research world can agree on there is what to name their own field. Common themes, again, are access by name and usually opportunistic caching. Some of us take a look at things like there was a once upon a time a presentation of sending video through the DNS and observe a lot of parallels here. But in the research world, usually it's access by name and opportunistic caching. Some other things that go on there are self-certifying or flat names that don't have any particular need to be registered in the hierarchy in order to be useful. Although very often these systems also have a public key infrastructure that allow you to find the self-certifying name. Other people argue that the public key infrastructure is inherently, for example, something that makes privacy unlikely because it's just the thing the NSA or somebody else wants to collect in order to start invading your privacy or cataloging everybody in the network. So whether or not that should be a component can be debated. And lastly, there's user-friendly names. Some of the systems that are out there, and in particular, you can find a lot of people who argue that the big mistake of the DNS was having names that are user-friendly, although I think that there's lots of people who like the fact that they can type names, and the definition of user-friendly can vary. A lot of the tiny URL names are certainly not mnemonic, but they are short. So what exactly user-friendliness is up for grabs, and certainly some of the contraction where people have the any bar as opposed to the URL bar has to do with being able to type search terms into the system. Next slide, please. You know, the reason I think the roadmap question is relevant to ICANN is that, you know, ICANN serves the Internet community by administering part of the DNS, then the question naturally occurs to them, what is it that they can do in order to make the system more useful to that community? What are the limitations that you might want to try and remove? You know, the present DNS is limited by several varieties of Gordian knots, and there's more than we've listed here. The most obvious ones are the 576-byte MTU that we inherited and the software that's in my DSL blocks that hasn't been updated in a decade. And it does peculiar things to DNS queries. There's a lot of last-mile difficulties experienced by the current DNS, which some people have said can only be solved by moving all DNS traffic into HTTPS, because that's the only guaranteed path you have through this thicket, because people will want to do commerce over the Internet. Second kind of thing is the protocol. You know, it's proved hard to define new formats. The original specification allowed for on the order of 64,000 different data types. And I think we've gotten on the order of 64 defined, so that didn't quite meet expectations. People who are doing email verification have prototyped everything by putting things in text records, and then when they went to get a formal record, said, well, why bother? We'll keep it in text records. But putting everything in text records has certain kind of operational difficulties and has led to people using sort of sub-labels, if you will, of a particular domain name to segregate the text information for different types. Whether or not that's a good idea, perhaps that's something we ought to institutionalize. But I think, you know, the protocol has shown difficulty with getting new formats easily adopted across the Internet. And again, there are people who argue that, well, gee, other than address records, you're going to have a hard time getting anything new through just because of the operational difficulties ahead of it. And lastly, it's not all protocol related. Some of it is process related. There's some of us who view it as kind of peculiar that the DNS Ops Working Group defines things that are called mechanisms, specifically so that they won't be protocol, which avoids part of the IETF process. There's also many different working groups in the IETF that are doing DNS stuff, but sort of overall architecture seems to not be part of that process. And maybe that's right or maybe that's wrong. But it does seem to be something that might need a looking at. So I guess that boils down to try and do anything to help with this, breakthroughs for the bottlenecks. DNS2, perhaps what we need to do is just figure out how to be an evolution to the next research direction. Or new features like privacy and confidentiality. The IETF is about to have a BOF, as I understand it, in London dealing with some of these issues. It's just something that wasn't conceived of early on. And I think, you know, maybe partially inspired by Snowden, but it's there. Okay, on to some more practical issues. Next slide, please. One of the things that came to us unbidden in this panel was Lisp, which is not the language with lots of parentheses that was used and is still used in AI world. But this is the separation protocol that separates local locators from identifiers. The technical thing is what it does is it allows you to, for example, have an IPv4 address that gets encapsulated in another one, perhaps, sent to the endpoint and then decapsulated so that you can do things like have an Lisp identifier that can move around the Internet to keep its locator, which looks constant. So it's a V4 or V6-based kind of thing. And ICANN was offered the opportunity to be the root of the mapping database. But as it turns out, all things addresses are politically sort of owned by the RIRs. There was also practical questions about what software we should use. We had both proprietary and sort of open software offered to us. If ICANN is going to do new identifiers, what are the steps that we would recommend about qualifying the technical approach, not to mention qualifying the political approach, so that if the address mappings, for example, of V4 and V6 are owned by the RIRs, well, okay, but one of the things that LISP could do is map to RFID tags. Who does that? So there's, and I think one of the other questions is, with a lot of the new technical capabilities, they might seem to be formidable in the technical space, but they pose even harder problems to the people in the political and governance space. I think another issue that came up is, should ICANN publish more in the DNS? When you take a look at the new GTLDs, there's, for example, a list of reserve labels that could be updated in an emergency. Should those things be available online? There's a group of people who are creating a repository for that, but, I mean, if ICANN is going to have a requirement that you avoid certain labels, particularly labels that aren't in ASCII, and are in multiple different foreign alphabets or worldwide alphabets, and you're referred to a paper publication, it's unlikely that a systems administrator will be able to understand how to generate the appropriate binary for five or six different character sets, including, you know, Chinese, Arabic, and the others as well. I mean, it's just an error-prone thing. Should those things be published, and it would be appropriate to publish them in the DNS so that you could check immediately to see whether or not a label would be prescribed or had become prescribed. Other people have noted that there are certain kinds of information, like domain birthdays, for example, when a particular domain was created or allocated, that are particularly relevant to its reputation, and that aren't particularly private information. You know, could those things be published online in some format? And if so, presumably you would want them to be accessed immediately, and maybe the DNS would be the right thing. So should some of this tabular information be published in the DNS or in some other method? Okay, next, please. Obviously, the root is one of the concerns of ICANN. We talked a great deal about the possibilities here. I think that there were sort of two possibilities that we looked at, one of which was hardening the process of generating the root file. The second one was hardening the process of distributing the root file. Another issue that we talked about but didn't have particular ideas was the analytics that take place on the root, and certainly there's lots of opportunities there. But with regard to generating the root file, one of the issues is that was whether or not there are more robust or secure hardware. Certainly Snowden has done a lot to make people think about whether or not we have to worry about new attack vectors. And there are vendors who are willing to tell you more secure hardware components. Should they be a priority? We didn't exactly end up thinking so, perhaps because we didn't know enough. But it seemed to people that hardening the root generation process might be a good idea, but that there was actually other opportunities there to globalize via shared zone control, and we'll talk about that more in detail. From a standpoint of distributing the root file, there's a lot of people, and this goes somewhat in line with the research direction, that say what you really want to do is, rather than worry about the 13 different Anycast addresses of the root servers, and whether or not you have a path to a root server and so forth, you should just distribute as many copies of the root zone as you can, and not just root servers. There's a sort of specific example proposed by Paul Vixie, which basically talks about distributing copies that are signed and have two particular Anycast addresses, and anybody wants to can join that, those Anycast groups. And since Paul's on the line, if people have specific questions or Paul wants to opine on it at the end of my soliloquy here, we can go into it in more detail. But I think there's others. I mean, one of the things is if you distribute a root zone copy that's digitally signed, it doesn't even need to have the address of servers. It can just sort of be a freestanding kind of thing. It needs server information, perhaps for the glue, but it needs to be digitally signed. There's some fine points about this. Some people have said, well, why can't you just deliver sort of a signed master file? Well, the delegation information there isn't signed, and some people think, although it can be later verified, that it should be signed in advance. And exactly how you would want to do this, there's lots of different opportunities out there. But I think this is one of the things that people have talked about a lot, not just for the root, but also for organizations. The classic example that people come up with is, once upon a time, CA.gov, otherwise known as the State of California, was de-delegated by the gov people on the basis of the fact that there were two computers in out of the hundreds of thousands that the State of California has that had pornography. Shocking. But the point there was that when CA.gov got deallocated, a lot of the California internet stopped working. And that was partially because they didn't have pre-delegation and the correct set of servers set up so that they could be independent of what was going on the root for any activities that just strictly stayed within CA.gov. And you can think about various recommendations that could be made about exactly operational things to teach people this these principles. Next slide, please. So the idea behind shared zone control is, can we imagine a way to have sort of a workflow language that allows multiple parties different rights to the same zone? So in the case of the root, could we split control to avoid the whole single authority issue? Although we're going to have to figure out how to put it all back together again. So the thing that people often might say is, well, okay, let's let every TLD owner be able to change their server information without having to go through an elaborate collaboration process. For other zones, since this is not just this idea is not just applicable to the root, we could think about coordinating glue, coordinating DNSSEC stuff, coordinating forward and reverse domains in some sort of standardized way. There's history here already. Some people have proposed the idea of having multiple signatures on the root. And furthermore, I guess if you had at least three of them, you could then even vote and say, well, if there's N out of M signatures, say that data is good, it's good. So I guess if you had three different sets of people signing three different signing data, they could vote. There's two different DNS ops proposals about restricting this just to coordinating DNSSEC signing information, which to some of us seems like a pity. If you're going to go to the trouble of finding a mechanism, then something that was a little bit more generic might be useful in a much larger set of things. Next slide, please. But let's talk a little bit more about the ideas in the root. We go to slide 15, please. on 15, please?
Yeah, we're on 15.
Thank you. At any rate, so let's talk about what happens today in the root. Today in the root, ccTLDs and gTLDs, they request changes to their part of the root data. ICANN vets these changes via business logic, in other words, a program, as well as humans. It asks the Department of Commerce for an okay, and then sends the certified request off to VeriSign, and then VeriSign does some additional checks, makes it, signs it, and fans it out. So there's actually already sort of this three-party process that's in place today. Next, please. Next slide, please. So, one idea, and this is just one version. You can imagine as many different versions of this as there are different sort of governance issues around the world. CCTLDs get to create a request for a change in a journal that's available to, that's viewable by all other CCTLDs, say. Other CCTLDs vote yes or no. And if you get a majority, then the change takes effect 2 hours after you get the majority. If there's no protests, so presumably you have a way to either say yes or no, then it just happens automatically 24 hours later regardless. So, you do this by a consensual kind of algorithm that's applied to requests that are made individually. Of course, you'd have to figure out exactly what you want in the way of rules. But this kind of technology is not all that complicated and could be implemented to keep out, to get away from the idea of a single authority that can freeze or control the process. Next slide, please. Some of the implications here is you've got to do distributed generation of root zone truth. I think before Bitcoin became as popular, some people would argue that this is impossible. I think today it's pretty clear that it is, and there's already a name coin, for example, that would change more than just the rules for changing the data. But there's yet another one of the perhaps research directions. Which keys would you use? Single, multiple, what protocols? I've been talking about journaling the data and voting and so forth. You could imagine doing this in the DNS, in EPP, or in some other basic language. I think there's also a good question about what primitives do you want. I think you probably want to be able to have some kind of vote. You probably want to have some delay in the system so that you can allow humans in the loop, at least for some of the things. There's been discussion that is there about which things are small changes and should be made pretty much unilaterally by the TLDs, which ones not. I think what we'd like to do is to come up with a technical set of primitives that would allow pretty much arbitrary workflow to be defined for the process. I think it would be delightful if we could do this, particularly seeing as I can imagine that the policy people who would have to figure out the exact workflow would be tied in knots for a long time. It'd be good for that. But I think, being able to do this kind of thing and just get the issue off the table about uncontrol for the whole system would be a very healthy thing for us to do in the DNS. Of course, you're going to have to argue about whether the complexity is actually worth it and how do you debug it. I think one of the other big questions is how do you plug the global root zone? I'm sorry, if the system gets compromised in this crypto, how do you ever restart it? Next slide, please. DNS fundamentals. I think one of the questions is, can we break the ossification? And if so, what parts need bots? And one of the things we did is we kind of ran through all the different parts of the database. The abstract database, in other words, sort of the name and RR structure and matching rules and zone rules, what could you do there to make the system more useful? I think one of the things, if new RR types would be useful, being able to have metadata in the DNS to define them has been something that's been an idea that's been hanging around for a long time. And either that or the idea of just using sublabels in lieu of resource record types might be a way to do it. But let's try and figure out how to break that logjam. Query and other operations, there's an effort underway by VeriSign Labs. Paul Hoffman has done some presentations about making the DNS API the asynchronous and easy to use DNSSEC. These ideas are out there. We've tried to get a little bit more information, and we'll follow up on that. But there's no reason why we have to reinvent the wheel if other people have done it. There's these issues about replication. I think at the end of the day, there's a question about how to make the whole effort worth doing. I'm sure there's a lot of people that would like to sit around and think deep thoughts about the next generation of DNS, DNS2, but you have to figure out how it is that you're going to make the game worth the effort. And you know, as we've seen with IPv6, any large change takes a long time, or even DNSSEC. But on the other hand, the momentum that you get from being the legacy thing might be useful. Next slide. So to wrap up, a few of the recommendations that are under consideration here and we can debate are putting more signed data out there for reserve labels or other things, perhaps other IANA parameters. A study to define a way to categorize the ossification and perhaps break through. Prototypes of the open root publication or the shared zone control, in other words, new methods of replication or the shared zone control. And another thing I think that a lot of the people on the panel agreed to, and we didn't talk about the collision problem, but that it would be good to run some test exercises or fire drills ahead of the need. So that's what I had to say today. I see there's already a lot of discussion in a very small font that I couldn't read while I was reading the slides, but I think we should open it up to discussion.
Thank you very much, Paul. We will now open the floor and ask that the lines be unmuted. You will refer to the hands raised in the Adobe Connect room to create a queue. If you're not speaking, please mute your line to avoid echo. You may do so by pressing star 6. To unmute, press star 7. If you are in the queue, please make sure that your computer speakers are muted before speaking to avoid echo. Thank you for your cooperation. Operator, please unmute the line.
Listen-only mode is now off.
Thank you.
Alice, perhaps we should go through the chat room queue first.
Okay, that sounds great. The first question is from Donna. What is the benefit of distributing copies of the root zone to any server that wants one?
You know, the general idea here is that what you can, if you have your own copy of the root zone, when Anonymous decides that it's going to try and attack all the root server systems in the world, you can just sit back and watch it happen and not worry about it because you've got your own copy of that data. You know, the design of the DNS from the very start was that there's a way to do the sort of zone transfer function so that you can plan ahead and make distribute copies of things. And then there's the ability to query and get it in real time. Obviously, if you have a copy of the root zone or any other zone that you might need, you don't have to worry about being able to access it over the network, perhaps during a denial of service attack or some other kind of events. If you already have the data in your local system, you don't have to worry about denial of service on the network. I think one of the things in the very early set of attacks on the root server system, I happened to be in California and then flew to Sweden, and the people in California were under the impression that the Swedish root servers were down. And when I got to Sweden, they were under the impression that the US servers had been down. And in reality, just a different set of access types to the servers had been down. So, you know, you got to think in terms of access to the pipes as well as the data. At any rate, if you have the data, somebody has to take it away from you actively. And so that's why.
Thank you, Paul. The next question is from Olivier Crépin-Leblanc. Why does the U.S. Department of Commerce need to give it okay?
It's just sort of the process that has been defined in the past. ICANN is currently supervised or observed or in some sense by the Department of Commerce, and there's various agreements between ICANN and the Department of Commerce the way that ICANN will proceed. Certainly, you know, globalizing that supervision has been one of the political threads that's out there. If what you want to do is you want to have somebody in charge of the root or some coalition in charge of the root, I personally think that it would be better to globalize it rather than having the DOC there, but that's a historical artifact of the way it's been governed.
Thank you. We have an exchange between Bill Manning and Jeff Houston in the Adobe Connect chat. Jeff, would you like to say a couple of words on that?
Yes, I can, I suppose, briefly summarize this issue. Before we had signing in the DNS, this whole issue of how do I know that the data I retrieved is good data, it's valid data, and the way the DNS was so structured, what you did is you put inside the DNS where to retrieve the data from. And the theory was, if I got it from this nominated server, it must be good. And if I got it from somewhere else, I don't know. Part of the thought process about the root, and indeed any other zone, is once you sign that data and clients validate the data, the location where you retrieve the data from is not that important. In other words, it doesn't matter where you get this root zone from. As long as you can validate its contents with the root key, then that's trustable data. So really the issue swings around to distributing the root key. The public key is extremely important, but the root servers need not necessarily have a distinguished role in a world where everyone validates. And this discussion is around, well, what do we do about this? Do we already have enough tools that allow anybody to set up a root zone server? And I suppose the answer is, if you are willing to intrude yourself in one of the Anycast clouds, you certainly can. Or if you wish to simply serve a cached copy, you certainly can. But could we go a bit further than that and actually remove this reliance on a particular set of root servers as being authoritative and instead rely on the key itself as being one of the sort of central instruments of saying, I don't care where I got it from, as long as I can validate that this is authentic current data, then I can trust it. And that seems to be sort of where we're discussing at this point. It's not we will do X or we will recommend Y at this point. This is really just considering the possibilities of how can we leverage more recent things in the DNS, such as the increased use of DNSSEC, and obtain potentially some degree of operational hardening of the root as a consequence. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We're now moving on to Evan Michalkovich's comments. I have a question about scope. The subject of the webinar and the panel itself is identifier technology, but the only thing I'm hearing about is essentially DNS next generation. Why is there no discussion of alternatives to the DNS, such as software-defined networks, or TOR? I see this as an unfair limitation to a full and frank discussion of innovation.
Hi, this is Paul. I think I said that the research world, for example, has fully baked ideas about replacements, and so one of the questions might be how we build a bridge to that if we believe that's what's happening next. There's certainly things like Namecoin out there, and various of these flat identifier spaces that are out there. The question, I guess, is that when I think of the roadmap or what's going to happen in the next decade, pretty much a lot of the identifier stuff is going to be the bets have already been put down and people have already done the work about what we're going to see in the next few years. And the real question is what's on the sort of last 5 years of that time frame. And I think that being able to have more distributed control over the namespace, and whether you call it DNS or ENS or something completely new, there are people who think that handles, for example, can replace all of this. From a standpoint of the ICANN mandate, what should they do? I'm willing to listen to your suggestions. I don't necessarily see software-defined networks as an alternative in the identifier space, or Tor for that matter, but Namecoin and a bunch of these other researchy kinds of things, I think, are alternatives.
Also, I don't think there's any attempt to limit discussion of other possibilities. These are the ones that, we've discussed in our panel, but the point of meetings like this one is to sort of open this up and make sure that if there are good ideas out there that anyone can suggest that, they get considered.
Yeah, and another thing is I think that, these are, with regard to the recommendations and things we're discussing here, these are the things where we could be more specific. When you're talking about replacing the whole thing with a whole new system, I'm afraid we've gotten more nebulous ideas.
Thank you, Paul. The only other question I see in the Adobe Connect chat room right now is from Olivier Capanablum, QR code, ?
Various barcode representations in the DNS are out there. There's a whole numbering space that is managed at least in part by EPC Global and the RFID tag and Internet of Things space that I think are going to evolve. And certainly there's other encodings that are out there. I'm just not sure exactly what we would recommend ICANN would do in this space.
Okay.
But the issue
is
Just let me follow up from that. The issue is, for example, that the DNS itself uses ASCII code as a human interpretable representation of that data. And in some ways, the QR code system is an alternate form of encoding of the underlying data. The question is, do the QR codes themselves represent an alternate identity space? And for my mind, I must admit, in looking at QR codes, I would actually look at that as an encoding vehicle as distinct from a truly distinct identity space. But again, others might have different views on that. But in looking at the sort of whether identities and identifiers, there certainly is a distinction to be drawn at some point in that kind of long-term vision as to the means of encoding those kinds of identities and the actual identity itself. And sometimes, like QR codes, I think it's kind of the encoding that looks like an identity space, but it isn't, as distinct from other forms where ASCII representations of the space have a more isomorphic mapping, a more human interpretable mapping to the underlying identity. Thanks.
Paul, I see Olivier's hand is up in the Adobe Connect room. Olivier?
Yeah, thanks very much. It's Olivier speaking. I thought I'd expand a little bit on this, and actually the QR codes question mark wasn't a question in itself. It was just to expand on Evan Leibovich's question. But you touched a moment ago on the Internet of Things, and I recall not so long ago, and I'm afraid I haven't followed up with it, but I recall an organization in France trying to put together a rival route with regards to the Internet of Things. And with a different naming system, et cetera, but effectively thinking, well, the Internet of Things will be probably overlaid over the other Internet, but use a totally different numbering and naming system. Has your committee been thinking about the integration of the Internet of Things with the current systems? Also with the resource allocator side of things, and I haven't got the exact language for it because I just thought of it right now, but effectively when you've got HTTP:// or FTP:// or other things at the moment, we really are looking 99% of the time at HTTP. Have you thought about other rival or possible rival types of naming that could work on this?
Well, I think there's a couple of questions in there. Let me try and answer one. The Internet of Things. I happen to be in Paris, and I've been in here for a little over 4 years now. And there's a project that I was actually involved in called the WINGS project. I don't know if that's the project you're talking about with regard to RFID tags.
Is it with GSM?
Are you talking about EPC Global or?
I think it could have been EPC Global. I can't remember. It was led at the time by GS1, and it's just vague in my memory. It's like four or five years ago.
I'll just give you a little travelogue of my voyages through RFID tag land. I got a call one day from some people at MIT who said, hey, we were interested in trying to figure out how to unify all of these RFID tag systems because there's multiple competing number spaces out there. So to simplify it a little bit, the number 5 in the U.S. military's RFID tagging system might be M16, where in the RFID tag system that people were prototyping for consumer products, it might be a box of Kleenex, while in the one that's being done for the airplane industry, it might be landing gear. And they sort of said, well, gee, what we should do is try and unify all of these. So obviously the thing to do was they defined this 96-bit tag space, which would have as the first few bits an identity, a code that would allow you embed legacy systems, but then another huge numbering space which would be out there for future expansion into this 96-bit space. And furthermore, what they did was they said that you could allocate bits out of this 96-bit space pretty much with the same ideas as we use for allocating address bits and subnetting in IPv4 and V6. At any rate, and so they said, but, you know, we would need to be able to have a system where we could have a billion identifiers and we could distribute control and so forth and so on. Is there any reason why we can't, we can't consider the DNS? And I said, I think it's like a great idea, and we worked a little bit on the ideas, and they came up with a scheme. This was the MIT Auto ID Lab. That eventually got handed off to EPC Global, whose headquarters, I think, is here in Paris. They're the people who originally did the barcodes. In the process of doing the standardization, they decided to change it into 6 levels of hierarchy because it was argued that the subnetting, the sort of, you know, variable subnetting scheme was too complicated and could never be made to work, despite the fact that there were a bunch of people, including myself, were saying, you know, it works in practice on the Internet. How can you say it won't work? At any rate, it got resolved into a more constrained system. Some people think that was just a commercially based decision, be that as it may. That ONS system for embedding RFID, for basically putting a RFID tree in the DNS was created. There is a research project that followed up on that called WINGS, and they identified the fact that, and that was not just strictly a French project. There was a German component to it, and I think a couple of other countries. You know, it was an EU project, so it had to have several countries in it. And one of the things that they did was they thought that you couldn't use the DNS for ONS because of the, you know, of the issue of the single control of the root. And they wouldn't listen to ideas about, well, you know, what you could do is that you could have trust anchors for the different country parts. And indeed, the numbering space and RFID tags did have a great deal of sort of country-based hierarchy embedded in it, although not totally. So they went off and designed their own system. There are other people who just claim that this whole ONS approach is wrong and are doing other things for organizing RFID data. I think one of the more, the two things that I think are, illustrate some of the political problems here are the way you got barcodes was that North Americans came up with, I think it was a 10-digit system. People from Europe came along and said, hi, we'd like a chunk of that space. Could you give it to us? And the people in the U.S. said, yes, and here's the bill. And they said, well, no thanks. We don't want to pay you for numbering space. So instead of paying you for numbering space, we'll create a larger space for ourselves and encapsulate you inside of it. People from the airplane industry who wanted to get a chunk of that space in order to register airplane parts went to ETC Global and said, hi, we'd like a chunk. ETC Global said, hi, would like to pay, and they said, no, thank you. You'll go create our own numbering space. One of the, you know, attracting and repulsive forces here is that you'd like to be part of a coordinated space for some reason, but as an alternative to paying, you may create your own. And so I think it's going to be interesting to see how that all works out. The history has suggested that it'll take a while before people figure out the allocation things. I'm sorry to go on too long. At any rate, there's a lot of history here, and if you'd like, I can point you at it.
That's
Paul,
very
sorry. Paul, Anne-Marie would like to be added to the queue. Anne-Marie?
Yeah, I just wanted to add to that that we had an experiment in Sweden together with GS1, the Swedish part of it, and we actually made a practical demonstration to show the possibilities with the Swedish Federated ONS service by using DNS to refer to services connected to EPC codes. And from what I remember, the result was sort of very clarification of the difficulties we had, not only by two such different cultures, which the GS1 and the ONS represented, together with the more open-minded and not so formal DNS part of it. So to be honest, I think that the demonstration of the directory service with ONS and the extended packaging, we just handed it over to GS1 and they could do whatever they like with it. And as far as I know, it never went anywhere further than that, actually. So.
Yeah, I mean, the Internet of Things has been a very popular research topic. I think that when I talk to, I think there are still some difficulties regarding the hardware implementation. And the intellectual property rules that were going on in ETC Global were also very peculiar because there were people who said, well, our intellectual property is in the hardware. The software should be free and open, but the hardware should have intellectual property. Whereas the software people said, no, no, software is the crown jewels and hardware should be commodities. And the compromise result in EPC Global was that each working group, if you will, for those of you that are sort of familiar with the IETF, each working group was its own private, closed society for intellectual property things. And they had a separate committee, I believe it was, that in any case, when one committee wanted to pass something to another, it had to be vetted for the right intellectual property controls before it could go from one group to another. So, I don't know, it's the commercial world there is very strange, and the other thing is that the hardware hasn't always worked as well as people would like. There's not just one RFID code and transponder type and standard. Some of them are powered, some of them are not. Some of them are supposed to operate over a few meters, some of them are supposed to operate over miles so that you can read all the tags off of the container ship while it's still well out of port. There's an awful lot of complexity there, and there's also a lot of intellectual property. Anne-Marie, it looks like she's having a little bit of lost her phone line. I don't know if there's anybody else that has something that they want to put in the chat window. I think we're caught up.
We are calling back Anne-Marie. In the meantime, Olivier has his hand up in the Adobe Connect room. Olivier?
Yes. Thanks very much. It's Olivier Capanavlo again. So I've got another question, and I'm a little sorry for sort of not really sorry for raising the question, but it's a thing that has been puzzling me for ever since I've been dealing with DNS, actually. The record class, which is indicated by IN and which I know is also in some case can be chaos, I think, is the only other one that there is in the record class. I mean, is there any... some people say, well, you just change the record class and you can have another DNS that will rival the DNS under IN, which is the IANA DNS. Is there any worth to these allegations?
there was a bunch of, in the original specifications that I was guilty of, there was a bunch of things that were there for, future use and expansion. The original thought behind the class system was that you might have exactly parallel namespaces that were controlled by different authorities. So this whole distribution of control thing was in there from the start, and class was thought of as one of the ways that might be useful for doing it. Similarly, if you had asked me back then, the idea that DNS queries would always have exactly, one thing, one key in the query, I would have said no. We would have new kinds of things and selectors and so forth, like you have in some of the sort of newer naming systems. Anyway, I think the track record is that the Internet class is the only one that's really fully fleshed out. There were some other stuff, but I think a lot of people think that it would be too hard to get the existing base to support a new class, and that defining the rules might be too hard. But it might be, I think that those are the practical difficulties.
This is Paul Vixie. I'd like to weigh in also. A lot of what Paul McPetris designed was much better than we knew, certainly better than I knew at the time that I was working on Bind in the first couple of decades. And so you really can't have more than one query, even though there is a field indicating how many queries there are. If you say that there's other than one, it won't work. Similarly, you can't really use classes other than IN. I know that MIT with Hesiod attempted to do that, But we had some trouble interpreting the scriptures in the years before I knew Dr. Makapetris personally, and so we pretty much broke all of that. Now, those ideas were good, and if the code had been a little bit more passive and had said, well, I don't understand what to do with it, so I'm going to ignore it, instead of, gee, I don't understand what you've said, so I'm going to reject it, then we could explore on top of the platform the world has today. But that's not the situation we find ourselves in, and in fact, it would be easier to roll out a new protocol on a new port number than to make classes or multiple queries work on the existing port number. So I apologize for that, but that's our situation.
Yeah, I think that, you know, when you opine about, you know, doing some sort of significant revision, you're probably talking about a new port number or perhaps even a new transport vehicle on top of something or other. You probably would want to have some backward compatibility in order to incent people to upgrade. It always seems to me that with IPv4 and V6, I was the chair of the IETF when the current V6 stuff was selected in a beauty contest. You know, you have a defined upgrade from V4 to V6, whereas the DNS tried a different approach, which was to have 1,000 little modifications proposed and some of them adopted into the code base over the years. So the DNS versions have almost been like a real number rather than an integer 4 to 6. And those two things have, you know, interesting consequences out there. But, you know, I think if you wanted to, you could go to a new port number and perhaps a new packet size. You know, if only we had scaled the MTU by three orders of magnitude like we scaled the link rate. We can argue about whether it's 3 or 5 or whatever, but, I mean, let's say at least by three orders of magnitude. That a lot of the problems we have about getting DNSSEC adopted would disappear. There's also been a bunch of people who have decided that for your own good, we will, in our software implementations, basically restrict what you can do with the protocol. I'm always amused by reading various learned discussions about what are the characters that are allowed in the domain name. At various times, and even today, there's a lot of confusion about that, where the original spec is very clear that you basically had what arbitrary bytes with the case mapping. Somewhat like the X500 idea, we assumed that there would be other classes which might have just simple binary or perhaps even different parts of the namespace, which would have binary match rules rather than case forwarding rules. But that's not what happened. Somehow or another, DNS turned into a 7-bit protocol. But that's history. Let's talk more about the future if there are future questions.
And I guess we're looking for future recommendations as well, right?
Sure. Anne-Marie, I see you're back. Did you want to follow up?
Yeah, I'm back. But the only thing I was thinking of is I'm not convinced yet that DNS is that bad. I mean, it works, and I think there is a lot of room for improvement. And even though we have been talking to the couple of people who started to discuss about using peer-to-peer sort of alternative route system. And we did have a meeting with them and we scrutinized the idea. And to be honest, they haven't been thinking much about what they are trying to do, what problem they are going to solve with that, because you don't solve diffuse problems with diffuse technical solutions. They are technicians trying to come up with a better solution for something that I haven't even thought about how to implement. So I would like to start with what can we do with what we already have to make it as good as possible, because we haven't really done that yet. I mean, go through the sort of backsides that DNS has right now that we could try to do better. There are a lot of improvements to do. So before we talk too much about replacing DNS with something that we even don't know how it works, I would prefer to be more self-critical and just see what can we do with what we have. Because it's not only about identifying things. That is probably somewhat easy. The hard time gets by when you're trying to find the different unique things and entities that you have identified in one way or another in a very smooth, efficient, and quick, and trustworthy way.
Paul, I see that Olivia just hand up. Olivier?
Yes, thanks very much, Alice. It's Olivier again. I've got another question, totally unrelated to the previous ones, which is, I guess, somehow technologically related, but at the same time policy related. We're speaking about the expansion of fields in the DNS, et cetera, and of course, the bringing of DNSSEC has brought a lot of new record types in the DNS. And I've also noted of some record types that have been originally designed for something that have been changed with time. The TXT record type, for example, was originally for non-machine readable data, human readable stuff, and now carries things like standard policy framework, SPF, DKIM, etc. And whilst there have been some attempts to somehow clean this up a little bit, like for example the SPF records being given a type 99 record, it doesn't seem to have been taken up, and so we're kind of seeing a lot of things being stacked up. Do you see any opportunity to clean this list of record types up in a sort of more managed manner than the way that it's going at the moment? Or do you see any threats to this as time goes with just so many more people working on new types of possible record types, thus ending up with the DNS being used for something that is completely different to what its original intent was?
I'm sure that other panelists are going to have something to say about this, but I'll just give you my perspective. I think that the DKIM and SPF thing illustrates a problem. Basically people use text records, and then when they got that to work, instead of wanting to go through the effort of creating a new type and changing the code, they said, well, it works. We're done. We're out of here. So I think the thing to do would be to try and figure out how to have a better path in the future for standardizing that data, or perhaps just standardizing the idea that we just go to sublabels instead of RR types. Think about a new scheme that would work better for future efforts. So I think we're going to learn from it. Persuading people to go back and clean things up is also kind of difficult. And the other thing is while the IETF might like to believe that it controls the standards out there, perhaps it's the de jure standards, the standards have also been set by the ISC and Microsoft and so forth from the standpoint of what they put into the code they ship. And it's not just those two organizations. It's just those are the two that I'm most familiar with. ISC at one time attempted to outlaw the underscore character in domain names, and Microsoft made it compulsory, which I thought was a delightful pairing. You know, there's address records are used for blacklists as opposed to addresses. People will pump stuff through the system and use it. You know, people have pumped video through the DNS, and certainly there's no video data type. You know, I think what we've got to do is to try and realize that the DNS, the analogy, I think, is that the DNS is always going to be a river, and we want to try and make the channel down the middle of it as navigable and useful, but recognize that people are always going to do strange things in the shallows. I think the thing that surprises me is that the DNS works as well as it does, given the amount of misconfiguration that's out there. I think people have, over the last 30 years, pretty much always found that DNS configurations are about 50% defective, where there's at least 50% of all zones that have some, you know, some sort of small error in the setup, and DNSSEC makes that much more problematic.
This is Jeff. I certainly have a couple of comments around that space. The use of the text record, the TXT record, is this kind of kitchen sink which gives you immediate gratification. You know, I don't have any barriers. I can just define stuff in TXT and all of a sudden I have a new pseudo RR type without going through any of the rigmarole. The real problem, of course, is misinterpretation, that some other group of folk interpret what's inside these text records with intention. Why? I put stuff in there in a completely different kind of motivation with intention Z. The folk in that other community see my text record and misinterpret my intentions. Yeah, that's a problem. But, you know, in the scheme of things, it's a relatively minor problem. I think the real issue and danger inside this space is when you put up different behavioural mechanisms, and streaming video in the DNS is one thing. Using the DNS as an IP tunneling protocol is perhaps going all the way, where you're trying to completely eliminate all forms of caching and rely on some degree of immediacy of delivery, that you observe that one of the few things that makes it from one end to the other, if you morph it the right way, could possibly be the DNS. Why don't we use it for IP as a tunneling mechanism? Once you start to play with the behavioral aspects of the DNS, you start to tinker with the performance of the entire system. And I must admit, one of the few things about the DNS that completely works and actually makes it work today is the fact that the churn rate of the information in the DNS is low, and this is leveraged by caching. And the reason why name servers don't collapse under the load, the reason why, you know, even modest attacks on the DNS have repercussions, is oddly enough because we rely on caching to eliminate that load close as possible to the querier. If you start deploying behaviors in the DNS that in a large scale alter its dynamic behavior, you start to make some inroads on the characteristics of the performance of the DNS and change that. And that may or may not be a good thing. So, you know, the behavioral aspects are as much an issue here as the interpretation of the resource record type. Thanks.
Okay, well, as they say at Club Med, either hands up or we're going to party. So I don't see anybody that has their hands up here on the...
Perhaps if anybody has any additional recommendations or issues that ought to be considered, if they don't have them now but they come to mind after the call ends, we do have a mailing list, and I don't recall what that is offhand, Alice, but can you remind people what it is?
ITIPanel@ICANN.org.
Thanks.
I think that if if you're on the internet, you should be able to find one of the panel members if you don't feel like talking to all of them. But I know I would certainly appreciate any ideas, particularly ones that go off in a new direction. Anyway, I think we're probably getting close to the time to wrap this all up. I don't see any last-minute things, so I think I'm going to thank you all for your questions. There's the ITI panel at ICANN.org mailing list where you can post your public comments. Again, thanks for attending and being a great audience. Alice, do you have anything to say to close it up?
No, I believe this concludes the webinar. Just to note that the recording, slides, transcript will be made available on the website, on the announcement page, and on the panel's dedicated webpage. And with that, I think we can close the call. Thank you so much for joining.
All right. Bye-bye. Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.